Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Sitting across from me is my favorite co-host, and I hope I'm his favorite co-host, Mike Cosentino.
You are my favorite co-host.
Since you're the only co-host. We have with us today one of our members of the Democratic Perspective editorial board, Bill Timmerman. He's been in here before. He's one of our researchers, and he does a really in-depth research. We're going to talk about Solyndra today. Solyndra is the scandal, the pseudo-scandal that was supposed to have happened a while back. And like you think you know what happened with Fast and Furious, you think you know what happened with Solyndra, but that's not really the real story, is it, Bill? When did Solyndra get going? Now, the story you hear out there is this is a kind of conspiracy of Obama, solar energy people, and
crony people from capitalism.
Crony capitalism is the basis of the whole Republican campaign against crony capitalism and investing in solar and alternative energy.
This is a good story. Bill's got a great story. There's a story of Solyndra out there which sounds good, but it isn't. I'm in a big thing now. We're calling a lie a lie. And the story of Solyndra that's out there is a blatant, bold-faced lie. And a lot of lies in the news today. You know, okay, they're just political games that they're playing. This has huge impact.
The House passed a bill saying the no more Solyndra bill.
That's right. Well, that makes us topical for today.
So right. Okay, Bill.
Even though this goes back.
Tell us how did Solyndra get going? What was it? We know a good deal about it, but lay it out for us.
Well, you got to go back to 2005, really.
Obama was in power in 2005.
Yeah, that's right. Obama was in power in 2005. But back in 2005, it was pretty obvious that we were going to have to think seriously about increasing our investments in renewable energy resources. This was something that both parties, Republicans and Democrats, agreed on at the time. And one of the problems that you have with solar power generation, photovoltaic solar power generation, you know, the silicon panels that everyone knows about.
And the silicon panels, I don't think, look that much different than the silicon panels we saw in the 1960s, right?
No, there have been some improvements in the technology, considerable improvements in the technology.
But the basic technology is the same.
Basic technology is the same. They now use amorphous silicon, which is cheaper and blah, 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 has a better power generation curve. But basically, it's the same technology. Well, the problem was that if you're going to have large-scale use of renewable energy, it has to be close to competitive cost with existing power generation sources from fossil fuels or nuclear and the like. And at the point where this energy bill was passed in 2005, the problem was that the price of silicon was about $400 a kilogram, which meant that the price per watt of power generation was way more than fossil fuels, natural gas, coal, oil. So they were looking for technologies to reduce the cost of photovoltaic panels, and some of the government-funded research had come up with a couple of other promising chemicals. One of them was, for those who really want to know, was called CIGS, which is copper indium gallium diselenide. And the other was cadmium.
Can you repeat that again?
The other was cadmium telluride. These materials were a whole lot cheaper than silicon and just as effective, although their power generation curves were a little different. And Solyndra, which was founded in 2005, was based on a manufacturing technology that not only used the cheaper material, in this case the CIGS, but also had a unique design. It was tubular rather than flat. The substrate was inside these long tubes that looked a little bit like fluorescent light bulbs. And it had several advantages. One is that it generated closer to peak power through at acute sun angles, so you generated more power in the morning and the evening than silicon panels, about 7% more. The other thing was that because it was tubes and they were elevated, the panels didn't create as much wind load on the building, so you didn't need to drill through the roof to fasten them down, which reduced cost of installation and also cost of roof repair, because every time you drill through a roof, sooner or later you develop leaks. So it was a very promising looking technology, and they'd been through the development phases, early development phases, in 2005 when the company was founded. And at that point, we just passed this energy bill, part of which was loan guarantees, federal loan guarantees to companies that were engaged in the early stages of development of inexpensive renewable energy sources. And these things take a long time, from startup to getting your loans guaranteed and so forth. So the process was initiated in 2005. And by 2007, Solyndra, which then had a working prototype and a small manufacturing plant and test sites that proved that the technology worked, applied for a government loan. And it's interesting because the initial investors in this were, among other things, venture capital firms, but among them was Madrone Capital Partners, which is funded by the Walton family. So Walmart was investing in Solyndra in 2007.
So the original decisions where they were very favorable, they picked Solyndra out of 143 companies that applied for grant to support it. Was originally done during the Bush administration.
Yes, it was
done by career civil service people working in the energy department, and then it was passed on. They didn't quite get it done right in the Bush administration. They said, in the Daily News, right, Mike, they apparently even apologized to Solyndra for not getting all the paperwork done in by the end of the Bush administration.
Right, true.
Yes, well, It's true that it took a long time to get these loan guarantees approved. And in the meantime, of course, Solyndra was producing solar panels and having to market them. And it very much needed this government loan money, the $535 million, to build a second plant, which, by the way, they were going to build in Fremont, California. American jobs, okay? But they needed, in order to make their manufacturing process cheaper, you know, and more effective, they needed a new plant built, but they had to wait for the proceeds of this loan. And during that time, of course, they began to have cash flow problems. Some of the venture capital partners put in more money to tide them over, and they renegotiated the terms of the loan slightly in order to help them with their cash flow problems. But the money wasn't finally awarded until 2009 or 2010, I think. That's how long it took to fund them. In the meanwhile, they're clinging on by their fingernails.
So the venture capitalist, folks, is not something that most of us can participate in. It's very, very, very wealthy people investing in a technology that really gambles on something. It is a venture thing. It's very different than where the Romney and Bain Capital made most of their money, which is basically buying up companies, loading them down with debt, and splitting them up. Venture capitalism is risking a lot.
Talk about what happened to the price of silicon and why.
Happened? It looked so promising.
How that impacted?
Well, it was promising right up until the point in time when the loan was being finalized. And then the prices of silicon started to drop. And as time went on, when you got into late 2008, the prices of silicon were dropping precipitously. And so suddenly, the cost advantage that Solyndra had using a material different from silicon began to decrease, and this made some people in the Department of Energy very nervous. They weren't sure that by the time this loan got through, that Solyndra would be as competitive as it looked like
it would be. And why did the price of materials to make solar panels drop. Was it a permanent thing or temporary? What was the story?
Well, what happened was that we had, guess what, this huge financial collapse in the end of 2007. And the silicon prices went from the $400 a kilogram that you had in early 2008. They dropped, and by 2009, they were down to $53 a kilogram. The reason for this was you have to go to Europe. Europe has for a long time subsidized photovoltaic solar power generation.
Imagine that, government subsidy.
Yeah, the Germans have been at this for decades, and they were leaders in installation. But what happened was that Germany funds their solar power installations by something called a feed-in tariff. If you're a utility company in Germany, when you install a solar panels, you get an increase in your electricity rate based on the number of photovoltaic panels you install. But what happened was with the financial crisis, the Germans were looking around at a way to reduce the energy costs for consumers who were suffering from the economic downturn. And they reduced the feed-in tariff. When they reduced the feed-in tariff, the utility companies stopped installing so many solar panels. The demand dropped. The suppliers of silicon had to drop their prices. So what happened was a financial crisis in Germany caused a reduction in demand for the panels, caused a reduction in the price of silicon, and made Solyndra suddenly non-competitive just about the time that it got its plant built and got the federal loan funds from the federal loan guarantee.
So they built a better mousetrap with American technology, American innovation, and they're building the plant that they're going to manufacture is going to produce thousands of jobs in the United States. They've got their better mousetrap, and bammo.
Yeah, most solar panels look like tinted windows.
Yeah.
So the Solyndra solar panels look like ladders for mousetraps. And as Bill described, it is a better mousetrap in many ways.
So Solyndra has a better technology, Bill, but with the drop, they've lost all their price advantages, and they have a disadvantage in terms of volume. In other words, China is dumping solar panels on the market like crazy in order to make sure that things like Solyndra don't get a foot in the door, right?
China buys almost all of its silicon on the spot market. So when the prices went down, China, of course, unlike the United States, has an enormous manufacturing capacity. So when the price of silicon dropped, they ramped up their production of photovoltaic panels almost overnight because they have this huge manufacturing infrastructure. And they were able, yes, to flood the market with solar panels that undercut Solyndra's price by a huge amount.
At this point, talk about how a mature economy like the United States does come in, introduce a new technology.
It starts out as private venture capital. Private venture capital people, Republicans and Democrats. It's not a Republican or Democrat.
Bill says this was a darling of Wall Street. Solyndra, this was it. This was going to be the thing that puts the United States over the top.
As Mike said, one of the great potentials of American industrial development. Everybody's enthusiastic about it.
It leveraged our technological superiority. That was the big selling point. And, that was actually true. If it hadn't been for the fact that the older technology suddenly became so much cheaper, Solyndra would be open and running today, and it would be one of the world leaders. But this is a problem with industrial policies that countries develop, is that sometimes external factors bollocks up people's plans. So let's talk about how you make the disruptive changes in your technology and in your manufacturing in a mature economy. China's not a mature economy, so it can invest hugely invest in solar panels because they don't have, there's no competition in the country. If the government decides to invest in solar panels, there's no counter pressure against that government by an established industry. in a country like the United States, where you have oil and gas companies that have billions of dollars in fixed assets and employ thousands of people, you have to be kind of careful about when you, about introducing a disruptive and competitive technology, because you devalue things like shareholder profits, and you can put people out of work in one industry who can't easily be retrained for another industry.
Can you give us an example from American history of what you're talking about, concrete example?
Well, here's a couple of examples. When we built the Transcontinental Railroad, there was no competition at all. The government put the money in place. People flocked to build the railroads, and they looked to the future. The land, the right-of-way grants of land along that railroad made billionaires out of people.
This is a government-industry partnership.
Government-industry partnership, but there was no opposition because there was no competition.
Right, accomplished a great thing.
Now, when Eisenhower set up to build the interstate highway system, everyone knew that it threatened the future of railroad profits. And some way had to be, there had to be some way to sell it to people who were profiting heavily from the railroad business. And what they did, of course, was they sold it on the basis of national defense.
I remember that.
That's the only thing you can get everybody to agree on. The space program and the internet were sold the same way. The government, nobody complained about government investment in the space program because we got to beat the Ruskies to the moon, right? And so we don't have as many people interested in the dangers of global warming as we had people interested in the dangers of the Russians back in 1953. So when the oil companies, who don't want to see the government fund a direct competitor, look at the developing situation, suddenly they got government money going into to renewable energy startups. They say to themselves, look, we don't want to do this. And when people
say they're spending millions and millions and millions of dollars on campaigns to make sure things like Solyndra and investment in alternative energy don't happen.
Let's talk about the politics of this. $535 million. Okay. I don't want to say $500 million is not a lot of money, but that's the number we're talking about. That's the loan that they went into bankruptcy on.
And they'll get about $135 million of it back.
The government will.
The government will get it back. Taxpayers will get part of the money back, about, I think it's a 20%.
Well, the other thing is to point, you got to point out, that's only 1.3% of the loan guarantees that the Energy Policy Act made possible.
All right, let's repeat that, Bill, because I think that's an important statistic for people to understand. Solyndra's collapse is how much percentage of all the loans that
1.3%. It's the only loan in default, or likely to be in default, as far as we can tell right now.
And we won't talk about oil depletion and $40 billion a year in oil subsidies, you know.
You know, coming from Oklahoma, the oil depletion allowance has been a joke for decades. It's our joke. We love it. It pours money into it. It never made any sense.
How come
it's
you never found a way to get a piece of that and get rich?
Well, you know how.
Your friend, your co-host, would appreciate.
He's a Democrat.
Let's talk about a little bit about the politics of what happened, and then let's go to Bill. And have Bill sum out in a rational universe, Bill.
That's right.
What would be the role of government and private sector in building advanced technology in the United States with the United States people working on it?
I just want to say a rational political climate. Okay?
Political climate.
The universe is rational. We're in Sedona. We've got to be careful of these.
All right.
The universe is always rational.
All right. So Solyndra actually starts out under the Bush administration. It's funded by venture capitalists. They're taking a big chance. The government offers them a guarantee. One of the venture capitalists, a man named George Kaiser, is an Obama bundler, but he's a smaller participant than the Walton family. Well, this is how the scandal starts.
People from California know the name.
The pseudo scandal starts. They take George Kaiser and they say, oh, he bundled money for Obama, and therefore the Obama administration approved this really, really bad loan because he supported the Obama administration. He's one of the great charitable givers in the United States. He's, I think, the 31st richest man in the United States, according to, I believe it's Forbes. And he's a bit of a traitor to the oil industry. It's because he says that the oil depletion and all these other breaks are really not necessary, that they should really be cut back to a more reasonable level. And he has a foundation that believes in, even though he's an oil man, in investing in new technology. This is the guy they want to get. They want to use this as leverage to hit the Obama administration. Do we have those statistics? I mean, they have, it's ISA. We talked about Representative ISA and his committee when we talked about Fast and Furious. They compel hundreds of thousands of different documents from the government about
The loan administrator says he never felt any pressure from the Obama administration to approve this loan out of the 143. Yet, and of course, once it became political, the Republicans asked for 300,000 loan documents and never found a scrap of political.
Another thing I want to point out here is that, remember, this, we have a financial crisis that intervenes here, and in 2009 we had passed a stimulus package, and the Republicans were giving President Obama and the Obama administration a huge amount of stick about not spending the money in the stimulus package fast enough. So there's a lot of pressure on them to approve projects to hire people. And so it wasn't as though the Obama administration alone was pushing these projects. Now, the Office of Management and Budget did say that it was maybe a little premature, that because of the drop in silicon prices, they weren't any longer so certain about Solyndra's chances. But on the other hand, the political pressures to get something done were pretty strong, and they were coming largely at this point from the Republicans.
The other thing that's happening is there's a bit of a, you know, you've got to respect the bean counters in this, but there's a bit of a conflict between the scientists and technologists who are really enthusiastic about what Solyndra means, and the bean counters are not sure that about the short-term economic benefits of it. But the Republicans take this, they have all these hearings, they subpoena all this evidence, they don't find anything, right? Nothing happens. There's no scandal there. Maybe there was a misjudgment, but there's no evidence of any wrongdoing. I don't think you probably have heard that part of the results of this intense, very, very, very partisan political inquisition.
But when you get to the point where the Republicans in the House pass a bill forbidding government support of such projects in the future, what you're looking at is people who are trying to win an election by sabotaging our future.
Yeah, and it starts out as a kind of gotcha policy. Let's get this administration for anything we can get them on. Let's hurt them any way we can. They pull out this one guy who's investing in a startup, and it doesn't work, and they blow this into a big thing. At that point, it's just kind of gotcha politics. But what happened now, folks, it's evolved into a campaign by people like the Koch brothers against investment in alternative energy, right, Bill?
That's right. So let's talk about, for the rest of the show, a little bit about how you go about transitioning to the future in a mature economy where you have interests that try to put their foot down on things that they think might impinge on their profits in the future. I mean, it's gotten so far in this country that a major oil companies, when they're looking at people trying to get renewable energy sources online because they're afraid of the effects of global warming, they fund a campaign to claim that the global warming research is a hoax. That's not a way to get from here to there responsibly, folks. Not at all. If you think global warming isn't real, you know, you're in for a world of hurt in the near future. So let's talk about what a mature economy does to transition to the future.
And a mature economy with immature politics.
Well, that's what we've got. But now let's take Germany, for example. Germany, the great manufacturing center of Europe with about 80 million people. smaller than the United States, but a manufacturing powerhouse. They started decades ago looking at renewable energy sources, and they developed a credible plan to introduce them as the technology advanced. And that put them in a position where, after the Fukushima disaster, they were able to simply say, we're going to phase out nuclear power. There's no way we could do that over here because we don't have the manufacturing capacity to replace it. But in Germany, they do. It's very interesting, a recent milestone in German renewable energy generation. Last May, on a very sunny day, a Saturday, 50% of the energy generated and consumed in Germany came from solar power alone.
Germany is about on the same latitude as Labrador, folks. New York City is lines up with Madrid. And what's the percentage of solar power they have over in this northern climate that's famously cloudy all the time?
Well, 20% of their power is now being generated by renewables. 4% of that, 4% of their total is solar. The rest is wind and geothermal and so forth. But they have a plan, and they've implemented it. And it's a government-industry partnership. You know, it's true Germany doesn't have any major oil companies, but they do have major manufacturers, and manufacturers need to have their power consistent and predictable. So they're very, very interested in seeing that that the German energy policy remains capable of taking care of their needs. So what happens in Germany is that the government and industry and labor sits down and works out a multi-decade plan, and then they implement it. And when you have a problem like the problem with the fiscal crisis, you scale back, but you don't do away with what you've already invented.
Let me ask you, Bill, just to get back. And we've been talking about industrial policy. Is Cylinder completely destroyed now? Is the technology gone?
No, because what's going to happen is the economy recovers. Silicon prices, I mean, they're closing silicon manufacturing plants all over the world because the demand's so low. What's going to happen is you're going to have a spike in demand once the economy recovers. Silicon prices are going to shoot back up until they rebalance, until people build more silicon plants. And suddenly, Cylindra's technology is hugely competitive again. And guess what, folks? We still got the plans. We could open another factory, pump in some money, and start making these panels again. If, by the way, sensible people are in charge of things.
So this isn't part of the left's green lunacy. I've heard it called
that. And it's not even an Obama administration thing. It's an administration of civil servants from both administrations thought it was a good idea.
Right.
It's sad to see Republicans cheering the failure of an American plant.
The loss of 6,000 jobs.
Yeah, that would have produced American jobs.
Yeah.
And cheering on China dumping solar panels on the market and undercutting us. Cheering them on and celebrating it like it's a great big victory because they care more about their political points than they care about the economic development that Bill's been talking about, where we set up an industrial policy.
And nobody with any sense thinks that drill, baby, drill is the key to our future.
Right. Yeah, it's when they become political, when these things become political, and as we often acknowledge on the show, it happens on both sides, but we certainly see it on the other. We are running out of time here.
Tell us what's going to happen next week.
We are going to have we're going to talk about the Bartlett and Steele project. Actually, it's a series of books that came out of a lot of articles out of the Philadelphia Inquirer. But what happened to the American dream? What went wrong? It was, the most recent book. What went wrong with the American dream? So we're going to talk about what the American dream is. I have to admit, I taught high school classes, I taught college classes, and we talked about the American dream. And so we're going to talk about that next week. I'm going to talk about that project with Gary LeMaster.
Yeah, Gary's coming next week to talk about it. There's a door breakfast, if you're a Democrat or a Democratic leading independent, this Thursday at the Old Sedona Bar and Grill, 8 o'clock in the morning, breakfast and speakers and planning, all for a big $11.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.